This programme was produced at and first aired on MPR, Manawatu People's Radio, with support from New Zealand On Air. Ka pai, irirangi te motu, MPR.
Listening to live and on-demand shows has never been easier on MPR. All you have to do is go to the App Store or Play Store on your device and search up Access Internet Radio NZ. Select and download the first option at the top of the list. Once you've downloaded the app, the next step is to open the app and look for MPR. Once found, select it and then browse freely. Supported by New Zealand On Air.
Welcome to Manawatu Conversations, recollections of the past and sometimes opinions about the future. Today we have with us
Roger Berry
and
Pat Hennigan, representing the Coach House Museum.
Okay, and I am Stuart Burks. Okay, now Roger, you're a trained vet and you've been working as a vet in the fielding area since...
Since 1953, yes. I was trained at Sydney University. In those days, there was no vet school in New Zealand, and the government had formed a government department called the Veterinary Services Council, and the idea was to encourage the veterinarians to work for veterinary clubs, which had been set up in various areas, committees of farmers servicing those areas, and the Veterinary Services Council derived its income from the meat boards, the wool board, the dairy board, and the government.
Yep.
Four parties.
Okay. Now, when you said veterinary clubs, what does that mean?
Well, this Veterinary Services Council, which was a quasi-government organisation, encouraged farmers in different areas to get together and form a veterinary club, and then employ a veterinarian. And
so they each funded that themselves, the farmers, as a sort of cooperative venture, was it? They were funding the veterinarian?
Yes, and it was all subsidised by the Veterinary Services Council.
Okay.
So I think about half my salary when I started here was supplied by the Veterinary Services Council. I think they had an income of about £100,000 a year.
Okay.
From the meat board, wool board, dairy board, and the government.
And the club was sort of run and overseen by a group of local farmers?
Yes, yeah. Yes.
Okay.
But getting back to the education, we had to go before a selection committee to go to Sydney. Sydney University had agreed to accept 10 or a dozen New Zealanders into the vet school over there, and the first time I applied they only took two other than returned servicemen, because all returned servicemen had preference.
Now, how long was the training?
For 1 year here and 4 in Sydney.
So you had a preliminary year in
New
Zealand? Yes,
I had to do medical intermediate in New Zealand.
Okay, so you're talking about 1948 or so?
Yeah.
Okay.
Was that 49, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Sorry, they only selected two.
They only selected two the first year I applied. The next year I applied, they accepted four, and I still didn't get a bursary. The next year they took about nine, I think it was, and by that stage, I'd completed a science degree at Victoria and was accepted and went to Sydney in the boat, the Wanganella.
Yes.
And we arrived in Sydney one very hot, sticky day and had nowhere, didn't know where we were going to sleep that night. We had to quickly find some board, and that was quite a feat. But we did find somewhere to stay and got stuck into the work. We had 4 years in Sydney, and we used to come home every Christmas because there was more work available here, labouring work and that sort of thing, that we could earn some money to keep us going, you know. Yeah. And so we came home every Christmas and then back again. And it was quite an experience going back and forth on the boat. We had some fine trips and some pretty rough ones too.
So how was it funded? If you would be an overseas student in Sydney on paying overseas fees, or did the government here fund you?
Well, no. The Veterinary Services Council had this scheme going, and they paid for our fees and that. Mm. Yeah.
Okay. So then would you have been bonded to work for them for so many years after?
Yeah, we had a bond of 5 years. Mm-hmm. That we had to work for a veterinary club.
Yeah. Any, or they could choose where to send you?
No, wherever you wanted to go. You had the choice of going, yeah.
Okay.
So that was, And not only that, we had to pay back, I think it was £400 a year as well, as the... Okay. 5 year working for a vet company. So I don't know really what the students of today are grizzling about when we had to pay it back, you know.
Yes, yeah. And was the a vet's pay in those days, was that relatively high or low?
Well, it was. I bought a new Vauxhall, PA Vauxhall, for £800, and that was a year's salary. Mm-hmm. And I think it's the same today. The salaries today are probably equivalent to a new car, the value of a new car, you know. It's all relative.
Okay. Okay. So now there was an organisation, you said, there's two things, I suppose. We now have vet training here in Palmerston North, at Massey University.
Yes.
There was nothing like that back in the late 1940s.
There was Sydney was the only vet school in Australia, although they could do it in Brisbane, they could do a couple of years and then they had to come down to Sydney to finish off. But prior to that, of course, there'd been a vet school in Melbourne that had closed down. But while during that period we were in Sydney, a new one started over in Perth. So there was some of the Veterinary Services Council bursars in later years went to Brisbane. Okay. So there was Brisbane and Sydney and accepting New Zealand vet students who had a bursary from the Veterinary Services Council.
So were you involved in the setting up of a vet school here in the Manawatu?
Well, I was on a committee that successfully lobbied to get it into Manawatu, yes.
Okay. And when was that?
That would have been about 1957 or 8. I was president of the local branch of the Veterinary Association, and that's how I came to be on on the committee. I think the vet school, I think the first graduates came about 1967. Well, that 67 is in the back of my mind. I don't know whether that was when the vet school opened or when the first ones graduated.
Okay.
But it was around about that time. Yes.
And the training here will be very similar to Australia?
It was very similar, although it has changed considerably over the years. We just did a basic course, a veterinary course, and then later on you could specialise if you wanted to. But originally there was very little specification, you know, it was just a basic degree covering all animals and poultry.
And was the main focus on farm animals or small animals?
Not really, no. I suppose it was slightly, but not particularly, no. Small animals and farm animals were probably fairly equally treated.
So does that mean that the vets who qualified a lot would go to work in a vet practice in towns rather than a rural practice?
No, they mostly went to rural practices. Most of the New Zealand graduates anyway. That was, you know, a long time ago there. It's totally changed now.
I think I've heard there's more a focus on, say, herd health now rather than individual animals. Have you seen a change in that?
Yes, that's true. And we can notice it here. When I left Fielding, when I retired in 1986, we had 6 veterinarians. And I don't know how many they've got here now, but there's about 13 or 14, I think. And these programs, herd health programs, and they're very time-consuming, and that's where a lot of the increase in work has come from, yes.
Okay, yeah. Does that mean that it's no longer economic to focus a lot on individual animals, or it's more preventive, is it, with the herd health?
Well, no, I don't think. I think farmers, generally speaking, still like to treat their animals, as veterinary patients, as well as doing these whole herd treatments. But you know, and when I first came here, Kimbolton Road from here to Kimbolton was all sheep. Well, now it's all dairy. And that's what's made the big increase in veterinary work in the area. We started off with the vet club started in Kimbolton, and they appointed Jeff Somerville as their veterinarian, and that would have been in 1951, and the practice started to expand down this area. And I came here in 1953 and was stationed in Fielding, and so I became Fielding's first resident veterinarian. And it continued to expand down the southern end, so we, over the years, gradually employed more and more veterinarians. And in 1976, I was awarded a scholarship from the Veterinary Services Council to further my studies overseas, and I had 6 weeks in America and 6 weeks in the UK and a small period in South Africa, just furthering my education. I'd, at that stage, become quite a bit associated with equine horses, and I used this scholarship to further my knowledge in that area. But I'd visited quite a few unsophisticated large animal hospitals overseas, and was quite keen to do something similar in Fielding, but we never quite got round to that. But there's one in Bulls now, Southern Rangitiki. That was the Bulls Veterinary Club. They've got quite a big, unsophisticated, large animal unit there in Bulls.
Now, anyway, using the term unsophisticated, is that you can do a lot of basic things that you need a hospital type facility for.
Yeah.
Is there a lot more that can be done for animals now, you know, like the sheep and cattle and so on, compared to...
Well, I don't know there's a lot more to be done. They have got a lot more expensive equipment these days,
yes,
and that's costing money, and it costs the client money too, because they've got to, yeah, the veterinarian's got to pay for all that expensive equipment, which is really, I don't think it's greatly beneficial to our patients.
So the problems that arise, the health problems that arise, are very similar to the ones...
Oh, yes. Yeah, very similar, yes.
And the treatments aren't much more effective?
No, I don't think no, not really. But as I say, they have got a lot of more equipment when they're doing surgery. And the anaesthetics and things like that have improved considerably, yes.
Yeah. Now, these days, a lot of farmers have got university-type training. Does that mean that they can do more of the things that vets used to do?
Yeah, I suppose. Yes, they do. Although I think, you know, nowadays they've got pasture management tools. They use these tools to measure how long a paddock's going to last, and all those sort of things. But the farmers I ever dealt with in the early days, they could look at a paddock and they knew straight away how long, how much feed they've got there for their animals.
Yeah.
Yeah. And that's something that's getting a bit lost. It's like I can remember we had one farmer who used to call us in for a sick cow, for instance, and clinically the cow would appear quite normal, the clinical signs would be quite normal, but you could guarantee that the next day that cow would be sick. And we used to tell this particular bloke, watch out, tomorrow she might have mastitis. And that's what would usually happen. He could tell, because he was such a good stockman, that there was something wrong with his animal even before it showed any clinical signs, you know.
Okay.
And I think that's being lost today because of the numbers thing.
Yes, because what sort of herd size would you're talking about dairy?
Yeah.
What sort of size would a dairy herd?
Well, in those days, most of them were about 40 or 50 cows.
Okay.
Now they're 200, 300, 400, 500.
I know with the automatic milking, though, the sort of robotic milking, now they're able to monitor all sorts of things terms of weight gain and loss and so on.
They have electronic tags around their feet. And that tells them how far they've walked and whether they're in season or not. All those sorts of things.
Have you seen the one at Bunnythorpe with the robotic milking? They've got 3 units.
No, I haven't.
That's fantastic, yeah.
The one I had was interested in was out at Ross Hawkins.
Oh, yes.
He had one there, a robotic thing, and they had tags around their cow's feet, and it was an Israeli system that he was using out there.
I heard it takes about 2 weeks to train up a cow to use the machine and for the machine to get to know the cow, but then they can go in any time, 24 hours, you know, some like to go in the middle of the night and so on.
No one has to be there for the milking. Absolutely. Which is incredible.
It's changed a lot there.
He relies on his cell phone, you know. That alerts him if a cow's temperature's up and all this sort of thing.
So was it enjoyable working as a vet?
Oh yes, I wouldn't have changed it at all. My father was a school teacher, so we were townies really, but when we lived in Masterton, I had a friend whose father farmed out at Rangitumau, and I used to spend most of my spare time out there and got interested in farming and would like to have bought a farm, I suppose, but that was out of the question as far as money was concerned. And I was actually lined up to go to Lincoln with as a rural field cadet, which was a good introduction to farming. And then I saw an advert in the paper in Wellington. Veterinary Services Council were advertising for students to go to Sydney, so I thought, oh, that'll do me. So that's how I came to do veterinary science. But I had written to the University of Edinburgh to see if I could go over there and study, but that was after I'd missed out on the bursary the first year, first time I applied. But it would have been too expensive to contemplate that.
Yeah. Do you think for the vet sciences, is the experience and the issues different for, say, Australia compared to New Zealand, or here compared to Europe? It's a different type of farming climate, presumably, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, not a whole lot different, no, not really. Yeah. Hmm. We had the Sydney University, they had a dairy farm out at Camden, and we used to go out there for about 6 weeks in our final year.
So were there any memorable incidents in your time as a vet? Troublesome animals? Or?
Well, yeah, I can remember one incident that was amusing. It was Christmas Day, actually, and I got a call from a client in East Streets and said that they had a pony with a lad around its neck. And, of course, I laughed a bit, and the lady said, "It's not a joke, we've got a pony with a ladder stuck on its neck." So I said, "Oh, all right, I'll come in," and we were out at the farm at this stage, and so I came into town and into East Street, and it was days of no cell phones, and yet when I got in here, there was half a fielding. The word had got round about this pony with a lead around its neck, and there was no such thing as tranquilizers, guns, or anything in those days, and I was a bit nonplussed. It was in a section, and they'd had the ladder across the gateway to stop the horse getting out, of course, and it got stuck in there and ripped it off and was running around the paddock, and you couldn't get near it. It would swing around like this, and this great ladder.
A wooden ladder, was it?
Yeah, wooden ladder. Anyway, I went to my car and I got a lasso, and I had a go at lassoing this thing, missed, and had another go and missed, and it took off and ran across the paddock, and the end of the ladder stuck in the ground, and one of the rungs snapped and the ladder fell off.
Well, it's a happy ending.
Yeah, it was.
And you gave them a bill for that?
Yeah, I suppose.
Double time. Triple time.
Yeah, but as I say, it was amazing how half a fielding seemed to get there to see this.
Big event.
So that was quite an amusing incident.
And what about now? We hear about the case of sort of major herd diseases that spread through and so on. Were there any of those sorts of incidents in your day?
No, there were a few. Not really, no. There was one disease, salmonellosis in sheep, that wasn't prevalent prior to that time, but became very prevalent around in the 50s, 60s, 70s, years.
Okay. And what about the individuals trying to build up quality herds and so on, and the selective breeding, and were vets involved in any of that sort of thing?
No, not really.
Artificial insemination?
Well, we didn't really do any artificial insemination. They had the Livestock Improvement Company which was the major supplier of semen, was they had their own inseminators.
Oh, okay.
But lay people who trained up as inseminators, and they used to go around inseminating the cattle.
Okay.
We did the odd ones, but not very many, really.
Yeah.
Okay. Mostly when there was when there'd been some difficulty with them, you know.
Yeah. Okay. So what was the position of the vet in the rural sort of social structure?
Well, it's rather funny. I went to a seminar once. There was an English vet out, and he was well known in the UK, and somebody asked him what sort of equipment he had when he was carving a cow, and he said, oh, he stripped off to the waist. And somebody said, well, what about your bowler hat? No, I kept the bowler hat on, he said.
Oh.
But no, I think the vets were fairly well accepted, and whilst they weren't quite on the plane that the English vets were, they were just mates, you know.
Yeah,
really.
Yeah.
With the farmers, yeah.
Okay.
Yes, because you mentioned Kimbolton Road was sheep all the way to Kimbolton. Well, Roger would probably had quite a bit of work with Ram Alley, which sort of went from Cheltenham up towards Kimbolton, and just about every farmer was a stud farmer, weren't they? And huge.
Okay.
Time for Romney sheep, wasn't it, in particular?
Yes, it was a great time for Romney sheep.
Yeah.
That was one other thing I recall. Henry Rutherford, who was one of the top breeders, and he had some very big sheep, and I had to do a caesarean on one of his ewes one day. His stomach was dragging along the ground. It was so big. And I took 28 pound of lamb out, 2 14s and a 10.
Oh, God.
Out of that caesarean.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did they live?
Yeah, they all lived. Yeah, they were healthy lambs. Yeah.
Gosh.
And the ewe could cope with 3 lambs and a caesarean?
Well, yeah, I don't know what happened. They probably fed the lamb more, of them anyway. Yeah.
So you were dealing just with the farm animals, or apart from this horse?
No, we did a lot of small animal work, and that was the vet club, as I say, started off at Kimbolton in 51. Jeff Somerville was there in 51, and then I came here in 53, and a few years later they decided that, because the bulk of the work was down the bottom end, that they'd build a small animal clinic at Kimbolton Road. So originally, the vet club, when I came here, they bought a double garage in a section in Truman Street and made a little surgery at the back of that, and we used that for a couple of years, and then they decided to base both veterinarians in Fielding and built a clinic on Kimbolton Road, and that was extended over the years as the number of veterinarians increased. And we ended it when I left in 86, there was 6 veterinarians, so, and the work had increased tremendously, you know.
And
a lot of I was doing a lot of horsework in the latter part of the period. We had about between six and seven equine clients.
Was this a racing horse?
Yeah, thoroughbreds, and there was a thoroughbred stud, a tour around the district.
That would have been quite different, was it?
Well, it was. I got roped into it originally, really, and then I quite enjoyed it. In fact, sort of joined them. We had a brood mare or two, and bred a few thoroughbreds, and one of them won about 7 races for Jack Welsh, a stock agent at Martin. And we had one that we raced ourselves with some other people, and it won a race on our wedding anniversary at Stratford.
It's a good present.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, we had a lot of fun. It was good, really.
Thank you for listening to Manawatu Conversations. This and other recent programs can also be found on the Manawatu People's Radio website, and a range of programs is also available on the Manawatu Heritage website of the Palmerston North City Archive. The address for that is manawatuheritage.pncc.govt.nz.
Support this program and others like it by giving a donation to NPR. More details at npr.nz.